Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions took it down to the wire and came away with a 34-31 victory over the Green Bay Packers last Thursday night, running the record to 12-1, 11 wins in a row. Certainly something we've never seen in our lifetimes. This upcoming Sunday at Ford Field, I believe at 4:25, they'll be facing off against the 10-3 Buffalo Bills for a big-time matchup. Matchup I think most football fans, not just Lions and Bills fans, are looking forward to.
Yeah, it's I know you haven't seen 11 wins in a row because it's never happened with the Lions. It's as a franchise record. Another franchise record that's probably going down is they've never won 13 games in a season.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
They are on the on a precipice of that as well, yeah. So lots of entertainment coming this week. It's one of the final two home games of the season as well. It is in an unusual time spot on an unusual channel, CBS at 4:25 this week, and so you're going to get the national audience, even though it's not prime time. It's still the national televised game.
Game I think of the week.
Like 80% of the country is going to have their CBS station tuned into this game, and it should be exciting. What's interesting is when you start breaking down, the value of the game to the Lions, it doesn't have a big impact on the NFC North, and it does have it has an impact on the number one seed because you're obviously going for overall record, but it won't impact any of the tiebreakers or anything like that because Bills are an AFC team. So Lions got a little bit of cushion room here, and if they lose this game, it's not the end of the world. They can still get the number one seed. They can still win the North. You certainly want to see them win, and I think this is a winnable game for sure. I mean, they all are at this point, right? Like, that's the way they're playing. Every game is winnable.
Yeah.
But it's more entertainment value than, gotta have it. Like, last week was a gotta have it. It was an important divisional game. Overcoming odds and all kinds of fun stuff like that going on. And this game is, I think, more challenging, but it's also, I think, slightly less meaningful. So I hope there's not like a little bit of a letdown, right? Like, I think the fans will be hyped for the game. I think the Lions will be prepared for the game. I just hope they're not, starting to look at what they need to win the division or what they need to get the one seed and maybe saying, well, if this is the game we lose, it's not a big deal. I hope that's not, I don't think that will be their mentality, but I can already see some people like cautioning themselves or preparing themselves in case the Lions lose and saying, this is a game that's maybe not as important.
Yeah, it's I don't know. They're still. I could go either way on this one. I guess it's going to be more interesting watching the game and seeing like how Campbell treats the game. Like in this case, that maybe they don't need to win the game. Maybe they're more conservative, but maybe not. Maybe he's super aggressive because they can lose. One, so like we're gonna go for it on every fourth down, no matter where we are on the field. Even though they kind of did that against the Packers, anyways. But we'll kind of have a feeling of what they think of the game as it wears on, right? There's not gonna be as much second guessing on Sunday as there will be. The second guessing will be like, oh, why did he do that? He did that because he knows he could lose this game.
I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on the fourth down decision making and the national fallout, like the perspective from the national media. I want to hear your thoughts on that. And so I almost want to jump out of order here, of
Yeah,
our
go ahead.
normal order, and I want to start with the game, and I want to start with the fourth down decisions, because the national narrative coming out of, well, okay, let's before we can get to national people, let's go right down to the end of the game. Let's go to the most important fourth down decision of the game, where you have a chance, you're in field goal range. There's about 40 something seconds on the clock. You can kick the field goal and give yourself the lead, but you give the ball back to the Packers with 40 so seconds, no timeouts, and they got to drive to get themselves in field goal range and if they want to try and tie. They fourth and one, they opt to go for it. They get it. They can run the clock down. They kick the field goal and win. When that fourth and one decision was there, what was your gut feeling?
I thought they were going to go for it, and I was 100% fine with them going for it.
Nice. Me too. I was a I there was no doubt in my mind. I 100% said they want to finish with the offense on the field because of the circumstances.
Right. And I
Go
get
ahead.
why everybody else would be losing their mind about it. I do understand that. Like I do understand the craziness call, except for when you look at it for what it is. And they and Campbell even alluded to it. Like the defense, which played well in the first half, couldn't stop them in the second half. They could not
Yep.
stop the
Yeah,
Packers in the
struggling.
second half. So how many games, like I've watched all too much football in my life, and how many games where you have a fairly competent quarterback on the other side, even if they're not fairly competent quarterback on the other side of the field, and you give that team a handful of seconds, and they have at least one, they had one timeout left.
No, they had zero
The
timeouts, but
Packers,
foot
okay,
40
they're out. Well,
seconds.
whatever. Even 40 seconds is plenty of time for them to go, downfield and match the field goal or even score a touchdown. I mean, Caleb Williams almost did it the previous week in the Chicago game, and he's a rookie, and they needed a touchdown. Like they were going to get all of that. So,
We saw Jalen Daniels do it against the
yeah,
Chicago
against the
Bears,
Bears, yeah.
right?
So.
With the Hail Mary. So we've seen it happen this year where they've been undone. I'm with you. The passive approach, the situation being what it was, I think people are being too short-sighted and believing that there's only one way to win a football game. And I strongly disagree. I completely agreed with that decision to go for it. I encouraged it. I wanted them to go for it in that situation as well. I think three of the other four situations, I was totally comfortable with them going for it as well. I did have one that I wasn't a big fan
Oh, the
of. I'm
one where their
curious.
own 31-yard line.
Yeah, so this is the
Of
second.
course.
I think this is like the second time he's done that this year, where he's gone for it like inside his own 30 when it was kind of obvious that they were going to go for it, right?
Right.
And the defense was ready for it, and I didn't like the calls either time. I'm a little hesitant going for it in a situation like that, especially when you're kind of a little bit passive leading into that fourth down, and so I wasn't a big fan. I don't know. Were you shouting punt the ball away when that fourth down situation came up?
No, well, of course, yeah. Like that one, that one's objectively dumb, right? Except, see, this is the problem. This is what I struggle with now because I always used to talk about it when I was younger. I'm sure we've had this conversation many of times, and I always bring up the this un a study I've never seen that either MIT did or Harvard did, 20 years ago, where it's like, you want to go for it on fourth down every time. And we've lived our lives with, as you said, like passive coaches for the most part that always play conservatively. And they would always be conservative. And you're always aware, oh, they're just trying to keep their job. They're always going to do the conservative thing. And that's not just Lions coaches, it's the
it's a
vast
lot of the
majority of
league.
football coaches. So, like in my life, when D'Antonio showed up at Michigan State, he was an aggressive coach, not as aggressive as Dan Campbell, but they went for it on a lot of fourth and shorts. And, when they would hit the 50-yard or even like at the opponent's 45 to, their own 40, their own 35, they're going for it. So I don't, and the Lions have been good the last few years while being aggressive. I really don't have an issue with them being aggressive all the time. It does feel dumb when they're doing it deep in their own territory. And I kind of think they should get punished for it when they do it. It's like, well, if you don't get it, I hope the Packers score on the first play. You know, and they scored pretty quickly, but it's like, just get it over with. Because you screwed it up. You shouldn't have done it. You should pay for it and then get right back out there on offense. I mean, that's the wrong way to look at it. You want to stop them on every drive, but this is the NFL. You're not going to stop good teams. You're not going to shut out good teams. It's just not going to happen.
They do convert fourth downs at the sixth best rate of all NFL teams, but they also call the
Yeah, a
most
lot
fourth down
more.
go for it than everybody else. So the percentages, say they're really good at it, but also the volume at which they do it is, I think, really what sets them apart. Do you think, again, another national narrative here, do you think that it will cost them something valuable down the road? Like, because
Well,
he'll go for it when he really, maybe shouldn't.
I mean, that always lingers in the mind. So the answer, I guess, is yes. But at the same, see, now here's where the playing the conservative part comes in. He knows he's got, well, all right, I could go many different ways because last Thursday, the Lions were the better team in the game, but their defense wasn't good enough to stop the pass. Like, that's why he
Yeah,
chose to do it at the end.
I agree
He
with you.
had to. Because he didn't feel he was the best team, at least one of the size of the ball, and they went with their
It was,
strength and
yeah.
worked out great. But if the defense starts getting healthier, it will probably be seen as more dumb if he does something like that later on in the season or in the playoffs, because it's like your team's now much stronger on the other side of the ball. You don't need to do this stuff.
Well, let me rephrase it. Do you think that he will be? That he is just a go for it all the time, reckless decision maker, or do you think that he is conscious enough to know, okay, I gotta dial it back?
He
Does he have
claims
that
he's not
restraint?
reckless. He
I don't think
claims
he's
that
reckless.
they have this all planned out. Like, they know what plays they're going to call. They kind of see it coming and they're ready to go. I don't going for it on fourth and one at your own 31, or you said it was inside the 30. I thought it was 30, maybe it was 29,
Yeah, I thought it was
28.
a 30 something. Yeah, I think you're
But like, that to me is kind of reckless, regardless of like, oh,
right.
we have it all planned out. Like, I'm fine at your own 45. Sure, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But once you start getting deep in your own territory, it's like, it is kind of reckless. Just punt it away. You got a good punter. You could
Yeah.
totally flip field feet.
Yeah.
Totally flip field position on it if Fox gets off a good punt.
I do think against the Bills this week, field position will be very paramount, and my gut is he will be more inclined to play the field position game against the Bills than just trying to go for it. This is kind of what I started off with, was it's a different type of game in a NFC North battle, where you're trying to knock them out of contention for the North, and you're trying to position yourself to stay in the lead in the North. You're going to it's like a Campbell's always referred to that as a double win, right? You win the North, you win the game, plus you win against a division opponent. And so for that type of game, I think he's a little bit more willing to be risky. Whereas a game like Buffalo here, I don't know if he will be as risky, because I think field position will be a little bit more important to him in this game. But again, that's just a gut. Okay. I for one, personally, don't think that he's reckless. I don't think he's this wild gunslinger that, like,
He's a little bit wild gunslingery.
yeah, but,
He
they.
very much believes in himself,
I think he believes.
in
I think
himself as and his team as an extension of
Right.
himself.
Right, I think he believes in his team, right? Like, he believes that they can get it, and it's hard to fault him, because you have two of the best running backs in the NFL, you have the best offensive line in the NFL, and
Yeah, but
you
they
should be
didn't play
able.
their best game last
Yeah,
Thursday,
it's
worth
certainly
noting.
true. Certainly true. Yet, when they got to have it, This is a
They
team
did, yeah.
that comes through, right? So,
Right. And I was, that's why I was totally fine with that one at the end. It's like, yeah, hey, they'll get this yard.
yeah, I think he, I'm not worried about him in a bigger game situation being overly emotional or anything like that. I don't think that's as much in his character as people want you to believe, especially guys from the, the Belichick tree that have turned analyst. It's an interesting debate because it was something that we talked about in the off season. We said, hey, now that this team is like really legitimately good, is Campbell going to back off? And both of us said no. We thought he was, Tiger isn't going to change his stripes type of thing. And sure enough, he hasn't. He's been equally as aggressive throughout the season, and it works. And I think the timeliness, the play calling, it all works out. Like, I wrote an article after the game about the last three fourth down decisions. Okay, the non-touchdown ones, right? Like, you have the fourth down touchdown that goes to Tim Patrick. You have the fourth down touchdown to Jahmyr Gibbs on a Texas route, which was the
Oh, you
most,
and your Texas routes.
oh my gosh. You should, I was screaming internally and trying not to scream externally in the press box because when I saw him make that cut. So the other three runs. The first one was a QB sneak up the middle. They covered 1A gap with a one technique, then they played a three technique covering the C gap. So it left the A gap open. And Jared Goff just snuck it right through that 1A gap, right? So then on the next fourth
Let's
down.
wait. Yeah, okay, all right. I got a question on that when we get to the end here.
Go ahead.
Does Goff, that was that the play they had dialed up, or does Goff see it and then check into it?
It's a great question. I think it's probably the play he has dialed up, but it very much could have been, I see it, I can get it. I'm 6'5". I just need to fall 6 inches and away we go.
Because
You
they
know?
don't do that enough, or it's maybe I
They're
should say they
starting
don't do
to.
that like. They don't run QB sneak a lot, and you point at 6'5", it's hard to see why it wouldn't work.
Yeah. And I think they've run it like three or four times this season, and I think it's worked every time. So, I think it's a good call. So that one works. And then the next fourth down, they put two defensive tackles in both A gaps. So they are preventing now Goff's QB sneak. So then that's when they run the pitch to Gibbs because the Packers were focusing on the middle, so they tried to catch him outside. The reason that play doesn't work is because Brock Wright gets out of his block too fast, and he gets out in front of Gibbs too fast, and he overruns his block completely instead of stopping and settling and then getting this the pursuit. He overruns it and then blocks no one, and then that pursuit guy ends up getting Gibbs. And so that play worked because miss blocking assignments, or didn't work because of miss blocking assignments. So then you set him up on the final fourth down, and they show the exact same look again. They do the tight end comes in motion, and they've done the pitch outside. So now you're worried about the defensive backs are now worried about the pitch outside. The interior line is worried about the run up the middle. And so the interior guys pinch, the defensive backs stretch, and then they just run it right in between them, right behind Penei Sewell and a duo block from the tight ends. And so it was a typical Ben Johnson progression sequence here where he does one thing to set up the next and then does the net and then sets up the next thing after that. And then it's just boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden you end up with a play that works because you've set the defense up to start keying on certain things. And that's why that fourth down play worked at the end, was because you had guys that were trapped outside, guys that were trapped inside, and then you run duo blocks right in the alley, and then Montgomery runs it, and away you go, and it's 7 yards instead of just one. And it was a good progression call, and I like the way that they do that. And they don't always have to do that on fourth downs, but it's nice. This is a typical staple of Ben Johnson, of using plays earlier in the game to set up a further ones, and it certainly worked there. What else you want to talk about? I could talk about the Texas route for the next 5 minutes, but I won't. So what else you want to talk about the game? Anything in particular?
I mean, nothing really stands out, because the game kind of unfolds the way we'd expect it to unfold. The defense actually played really well in the first half, a lot
Yeah.
better than I thought they would have played. I
Right.
was surprised in the post-game locker room speech. I'm sure you see. Are you in? You're not in the room for that, right?
Not for the locker room speech. No,
Right.
I don't get to go until after.
Although we all get to see it, but I wonder, I was just wondering if you were in the room for that, where he didn't give a game ball to Pat O'Connor. And I know Herb Street was the one who brought it up during the game. I'm not breaking news here or anything, but he played great. He was in the backfield all night. He disrupted that offense, at least in the first half. In the second half, he was still breaking through, but it didn't really disrupt anything. So, like, defense played kind of exactly how I thought they would have played, except for they didn't spread it out like I thought they would. They played great in the first half and then, were a sieve in the second half. But, they were able to hold on and win. Z'Darrius Smith, another sack. He's been an excellent pickup so far.
Yeah,
Lions had a lot of trouble. Oh, sorry.
I was gonna say his pass rush rate has been like 20 or 30% higher than what it was when he was in Cleveland. He's
Yeah.
really elevated his game.
Yeah, and he's already got four sacks, right? And I think he only had
Eight going in. Eight in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken.
eight.
Maybe, yeah, didn't he have like, well, maybe he had six or
I
I
thought he
thought it
had
was
fewer
eight.
than that.
Oh, maybe he did, and I'm just misremembering.
All right, hang on, hang on, hang on.
You might be right because I do think he had a half sack a game. So yeah, it would have been four. Now, thank you.
That's what
Yeah,
I thought.
four.
It's
Four.
like
He has
his
eight now.
production. It's eight now. All right. He only has three as a Lion. I thought he had
Okay.
four as a Lion. One, two, three, four,
He's got a
five,
couple half sacks,
six,
right?
seven, eight. He's got eight total, three with the Lions, five with Cleveland. Okay. So I don't know. He's played very, yeah, he's had, yeah,
Okay.
three as a Lion, in four games. So that's pretty good. He's been great. Lions didn't tackle well last Thursday. I made a note of that. It's like they were missing tackles a lot, and Green Bay wasn't missing them as much. But the offenses are two different things because, like, when the Packers are on offense, like, they could go to third and 10, they could be third and long, and Love can just go back there and start firing to covered receivers, and like they're going to pick up some long third downs here and there. Whereas Goff, we're never going to see Goff do that, or we don't really see Goff do that, and that's more by design. It's not that that doesn't mean he can't do it. It's just they're designed to like just hit open receivers, which he does all the time. But it's something that you envy that a little bit of the Green Bay offense is something that we don't do. But what does it matter? Lions ended up winning. They scored 34 points compared to the Packers 31.
Once Aleem went down,
Oh boy.
I was a little concerned there.
A little concern.
Yeah. Well, because they didn't have a player. They had one player in their front seven that was with the team when the season started.
Yeah, I was track. It was, yeah, it's just Campbell.
Yeah, that was it.
That's it.
And I think the guys that they have brought in all played well. Especially like you said, the first half. I thought O'Connor, like you said, played very well. Miles Adams flashed here and there. Muhammad continues to ascend, in my opinion. I think he's been really quite terrific. David Long recovers a fumble. Ezekiel Turner is the guy who makes the key tackle in the open field on Jordan Love to force them to go for three to tie instead of a touchdown. And so it was you had some quote unquote replacement guys that made some really key plays in this game. And it was awfully impressive. So I was happy to see the production that they gave us.
And that is one thing the Lions have been missing this season is that, I mean, the Lions have a lot of good players, but leading all the way up to the Packer game, it's always been their star players coming through. It's never been really the support guys. And there's like Very good reason for that, because they do have a lot of, star caliber players. It's kind of jarring to watch as the Lions fan, right? But like, final this Green Bay game, a lot of these B level players, they stepped up big. Tim Patrick stepped up big. Pat O'Connor, Ezekiel Turner. Like, this was that first game where they got like big performances out of like lower tier guys.
Dear depth, yeah.
So that's good to see. It wasn't all the stars, it was a lot of the other guys. So it's good to see.
Yeah, it's just another way to win, right? Like we talked about this team a couple weeks ago about how they continue to find new ways to win. Like there's no like just set path that they have to take in order to get a victory. Like they can beat you so many different ways. They can beat you on the ground, they can beat you through the air, they can beat you with special teams, they can beat you with their reserves. Like they can blow you out, they can win tight games, like they can do it all. Like, and that's I think what makes this team really something special.
All right. I mean, that's really all I had for the Packers.
Yeah, I don't I think that game was, 10 days plus ago, right? So, we're past it. I am or it feels like it. Gosh, it's only been a week. Yeah, but it feels like it's been like a couple weeks ago because of the delay. But yeah, I'm ready to turn our focus towards the Bills.
Right. Well, first we'll go through the transactions, right? We skipped over that from the beginning. All right, so before last week's game, they re-signed Mo Alexander to the 53-man roster. He was in the game. He was return man.
Yeah, he was a punt return.
All right. And then they released safety Lauren Strickland and then signed him back to the practice squad.
Yeah, those were just procedural moves. They haven't made any moves post game. And so they've been rolling with the roster that they have, and they've been returning guys. The guys are getting healthier, and so that's they haven't really needed to make any big moves.
All right, injury report. Not there's a lot of not surprising names on here. Left tackle Taylor Decker knee injury, full practice Wednesday or Thursday.
So after missing two games, it looks like he's going to be ready to go. Two full practices is a great indication that he should be back. It'll be it's I think he is a guy that not only is going to give them some stability and pass protection, but I think he can help them in their run game as well. Skipper had probably
We,
his best game as a
yeah,
Lion.
we that as soon as I looked at Taylor Decker's name, like, oh, we'd bring up Dan Skipper. He played great. He's puking in the locker room, and on Campbell, like, Campbell adds to his legend by like slipping that into his post game. It makes me wonder if it's scripted sometimes. Like, oh, this is too perfect that he's able to slide that in there, get a big laugh out of everybody. And everybody's laughing at home watching it.
He let up, he gave up one pressure on like 40 something drop. It was unbelievable, like the best I've ever seen him play. And so and then as soon as he has a great game, Taylor Decker's ready to return. And while Decker did very well against the pass, I do think he is not as productive in the run game. And I think
Skipper.
Skipper is not as productive in the run game. And I think Decker will give them a little bit more added oomph, will allow them to run both left and right more effectively.
Well, and we'll be delving into the Bills, and you might have some separate thoughts about this. It might give Skipper some opportunity. Maybe they'll start running six offensive linemen again. Maybe they won't necessarily need that against the Bills defense. I don't know. Next up, defensive tackle Aleem McNeil. We discussed him a little bit. Concussion, full practice Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, at this point, they said they were expecting him to go. Two full practices means that he's pretty much almost out of the woods. He's just got to get through one more practice, and then he should be good to go. So I'm expecting him to be cleared on Friday and back in the starting lineup.
Defensive tackle DJ Reader, shoulder injury, did not practice Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
So the Lions ran a full padded practice, like an intense full padded practice on Wednesday to kind of get them back in the groove after a little bit of a layoff because that Thursday game. So keeping Reader out of that game coming off an injury is not surprising because one, he's one of the oldest players on the team, so you're not going to want to put him in unnecessary, situations where he's going to have to, have unnecessary impact. Two, coming off an injury, they're not going to want to risk that either. So I'm not surprised he took the day, he got the day off there. Limited to on Thursday is a really good indicator that he's on track to go, but you got to see for sure on Friday. My gut tells me I'm expecting him to be back as well, which will be very important to get both those guys back.
Defensive lineman Josh Pascal, knee injury, limited practice Wednesday, full on Thursday.
Again, he looks like he's on track to return to his starting position as well, which will put Muhammad into more of a rotational role behind both Smith and Pascal. Really gives them overall depth on the edge, which is something they haven't had in a few weeks.
Defensive lineman Levi Onwuzurike, hamstring injury, limited Wednesday, Thursday.
They're taking it a little easy with him with the limited practices, but he's tracking the right way as well. I am curious if he does play, if he will still be kind of limited in the game, so they won't want to push him, or if maybe they just kind of scale him back and don't play him another week. I'm not exactly sure where they'll go. If he gets in a full practice on Friday, I think that'll be very telling about his usage. I think if he gets a full practice, he'll probably get a full load of snaps. If not, if he's limited again on Friday, I think he could be limited in the game if he is able to play.
Linebacker Trevor Nowaski, concussion, added on Thursday and did not practice.
So late in the week, concussion. Yeah, I don't think he can get cleared. The NFL used to have a very clear protocol that they published that they let people know. Okay, a player in a concussion protocol has to do like these six steps of things that they have to do to get cleared. In the last couple of years, they've been tweaking the concussion protocol and they have not released all the details on what it is. So we're not 100% sure on what he'd have to do to be cleared, but it seems very unlikely that he would be able to progress in a manner in which he would be cleared with just one practice between here and the game. I'm fully expecting him to be ruled out. And if he's ruled out, it just means they're going to have to get creative with that linebacker three role. They had been using him, Turner, and Long, rotating through that third linebacker role, with Turner and Long kind of acting as off-ball guys and Nowoski as the Sam on the line of scrimmage. If Nowoski can't go, they don't really have a natural Sam replacement. And so I think they might get creative. Maybe they would drop Long up. Maybe they elevate Jamal Adams again, and then they start using Jamal Adams in kind of an edge pass rushing role, which he's done in the past. I think they can get creative if Nowoski doesn't play, which it doesn't seem like he will.
All right, better not have all these guys come back. It might be overwhelming to have them all come off the injury report at once, to have them all playing. It'd be a bad omen.
What gets really interesting is when you start looking at the fact that after this game, Alex Anzalone, Ennis Rakestraw, and Ifeanyi Melifonwu join Jalen Reeves-Maybin and all being eligible to return to practice as well. And the word on the street is Anzalone is expected to return to the playing field before the end of the season.
Oh,
So
wow.
That would mean he will probably, oh, he very likely could open his window on Monday and then start seeing how quick he can get acclimated up and maybe even play in one of the final games of the season. So Rakestraw and Melifonwu, it's kind of up in the air with them on when they'll come back. Same thing with Reeves-Maybin. He is progressing, quote unquote, slowly. Khalif has another week. He can't come back until after week 16, so he'll be eligible to return to week 17. But Anzalone is a guy, he could be back soon, like a couple weeks type of thing. Like I said, the timeline for him is expect him back before the season, the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, Just strap a couple of magazines on that arm and, send them back out there.
Well, that's really the difference, right? Like the difference between like his injury and Hutch's injury, because they're both breaks, is your arm is just, it's smaller bones, quicker heals, and you're not putting stress on your arm as much as you are on your leg. So it's something he can recover from a lot faster than a guy like Hutch, or even James Houston in the past when they break their legs.
All right, let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. Lions favored by 2.5. The Lions keep shrinking, although Bills are an excellent team. The game's going to be Sunday, 4:25 p.m. Mentioned that already at Ford Field. CBS number one crew, Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wolfson down on the field. Now, they did the Thanksgiving game, so they've been here recently. The Lions now have had all four number one teams, right? They've had Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt. They've had Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth. They've had Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit. And they've had Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. So
And
they
they
didn't have the Simpsons crew, but maybe that'll be for another season. But
had
when's the
Monday night
last?
too. Monday
Oh
night
yeah,
as well.
shoot, they've
So
had
that's
Joe
five.
Buck and Troy Aikman. Yeah, I forgot about the. When was the last time that happened?
Oh,
I'm guessing
never.
nobody tracks that.
Yeah, never,
It's
though.
probably last year. I don't. Did they have a Thursday night game on Amazon Prime last year?
Yeah,
Yeah,
for
didn't
the
they play the Packers?
opening week against KC. Oh, but that was
No, that was
technically
on NBC.
Tirico. Yeah, it was technically Tirico. Oh
Was
gosh, I
it
don't
one of the
remember.
Packers games on a Thursday?
It feels, yes, week four. Week
So, all
four
right.
was a
So
Thursday
last year was the last time it happened.
game.
As long as Romo and Nance did it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't recall that. Yeah, but they get, they it's a big game. So you get the big crew.
All right, referee Adrian Hill, 15th season, 6 as a referee, averages around 15 flags, 13 flags per game, just slightly a quarter of a flag above average.
Yeah, I'm not expecting anything quirky or anything like that from a flag standpoint in this game.
Right, Bills 10-3, mentioned that already. They had won 7 in a row until last Sunday. Did you catch any of that game at all? Man.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Great
I was
game, but
watching it.
great game by all. That was the fantastic NFL game. Josh Allen at the greatest fantasy performance of all time, or at least going back to 1970. I'm sure there's all sorts of stats on that. Three touchdowns, throwing three on the ground. I think Otto Graham did that. They were saying during the game that nobody had done it, but I think didn't they unearth that Otto Graham did that once? But yeah, great game. And Stafford played great. Both like the Rams came away with the win.
Yeah, it was it was an exciting game, but I think it showed the flaws that the Bills defense has. And we'll get into it a little bit more, but there's some interesting numbers when you start looking at the opponents that they've played and how they've done against better opponents versus how they've done against weaker opponents. And so it's I'll save that for a little bit later. And unless you want to talk about it now, but I uncovered some things when I was going through my research this week about how they perform. They typically play up, the defense in particular plays up or down to its opponent. And so I do think that they're susceptible. So we'll get to that. I'll hold on to that for a bit, and we'll get to that when we break down defense. Let's keep going through our normal wrap up here.
DVOA rankings, Lions still sit at number one. Bills are number four offensively for the Lions, fourth overall, 10th throwing the ball, number two on the run. Bills defensively, conversely, are number 10, 11th against the pass, eighth against the rush. Defensively, the Lions are number three overall, number one against the pass, and number six against the run. Bills offense is number two overall, second throwing the ball, fifth running the ball. Lions are still holding the number one spot in special teams. The Bills way down at number 29.
Bills were at 25, and then their block punt return for a field goal really just hammered them. Plus, they had another gaffe at the end of the game that I want to talk about as well, which may have impacted their special teams ranking as well. So, all right, so let's talk about the scheme first. You want to start on offense, right?
Yeah.
So the head coach is Sean Dermott, but Sean Dermott, McDermott is more of a defensive coach, and so he's really relied on his offensive coordinators to be productive. And he had Ken Dorsey running the offense, and then in 2023, they became very stagnant on offense. They weren't scoring in the red zone. They were turning the ball over. They went 5-5 to start 2023, and then they fired him and they hired Joe Brady. Joe Brady's most famously known for leading the LSU Tigers and Joe Burrow and
Joe
Ja'Marr
Burrow.
Chase and Justin Jefferson, like that LSU Tigers team to a national championship, and Burrow wins the Heisman that year, and Brady was kind of the architect of that offense. He was co-offensive coordinator, I think, that year. And so Brady parlays that into a job with the Carolina Panthers as an OC, and then but he that's Matt Rhule Carolina Panthers, which only lasted like 2 seasons. He gets fired, takes a quarterback's job with the Bills, and he's working a lot with Josh Allen. He's really learning about Josh Allen. He's helping Josh Allen settle down and be productive, and eventually gets elevated to interim offensive coordinator when Dorsey gets fired. And then they end up going 6-1 down a stretch, and he ends up unlocking the offense, and gets hired full time as the offensive coordinator this year, and gets to reintroduce a new his new quote unquote new style of offense, which is really what they were running last year anyways. But essentially, the big change in the Bills offense this year is they traded away Stephon Diggs, who was their wide receiver one, right? And when they traded him away, they brought in a handful of other receivers that aren't like necessarily wide receiver ones, but a whole bunch of like good, talented wide receivers that can all contribute. And the idea what here was, you have a lot of wide receivers who can contribute. You have a lot of tight ends who can contribute, and a lot of running backs who can contribute. And then you just spread the ball around. They want Josh Allen to be their point guard. They want him
Who
to,
does that sound like?
yeah, right? I know. It's very reminiscent. And so they spread the ball around to all these talented skill players, and they let it be the Josh Allen show. They focus everything around Josh Allen. They want him to be productive. And so they set him up to run, they set him up to pass, and they're very quarterback centered in their approach. And so, like you said, he has a game la because of this approach. He has a game last week where he ends up having 6 touchdowns. When they got behind the Rams, they surprisingly went away from the run, which is not something they normally do, but Josh Allen still ran for like 80 yards, just from the quarterback position instead of the running back, instead of having their running back do it. So they were still chewing up yards on the ground. So you're going to find a lot of stats that favor the Bills, right? Like most offensive categories, they're going to finish in the top 12, like almost all of them. And I'd say about half of like the key offensive categories, they're going to end up like in the top two, right? Like points scored, they're number two behind the Lions, who are number one. They don't run a lot of fourth down conversions, but they are very successful when they do. They're best team at converting fourth downs. They're highly efficient in the red zone. They don't give the ball away. Their EPA's really high, both pass and run EPA. They don't give up a lot of sacks because Josh Allen's really hard to take down. It doesn't matter if they face stacked boxes or not. They still find ways to be productive. They lean on the yak. And they have success on the ground. They utilize their running backs in the passing game, not just like as flaring them out, but they use them down the field. Like they're really creative in finding ways to be productive. And I think the offense is an offense that can, on any given Sunday, go out and put up 40 points and not even blink an eye, right? Like I said, they average 30.5 points on the year, which is the second best, right behind the Lions, who average 32.5. So it'll be, I think, arguably the toughest offense that they've had to face this year. And the Lions will have to be on their game in order to try and slow it down, hold them to field goals, and then, counterpunch and score on their own.
The over under for this game is 54 and a half, well above the over unders for any other game this week. Just so they expect an offensive barrage.
Yeah, so do I.
Bills depth chart. You already mentioned Josh Allen. Everybody listening knows that their number starting quarterback's Josh Allen. Mitch Trubisky's backing him up. The running backs, James Cook leads the way. Ray Davis and Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson, the ex-Lion. They also employ a fullback, although it doesn't seem they use him a ton. Reggie Gilliam.
Yeah, not a lot. James Cook is a really good back. He's kind of like a Jahmyr Gibbs type in that he can catch the ball. He's very fast. He can be elusive in space. He lacks Gibbs' ability to run between the tackles as much. Ray Davis is the thunder in their running back duo, and then Ty Johnson's their third down option. He's their best pass pro
Specialist.
guy. Yeah, he's best pass pro guy. And so in passing situations where they need a running back to block, they'll use Ty Johnson. In the past few weeks, they've used all three of them kind of equally.
Yeah, we
They've
saw a
really,
lot of Ty Johnson against the Rams.
yeah, right. And I think that's because they were having to throw a lot. Most weeks, historically, James Cook will be the lead guy, but they've kind of backed off of him of late, which is I think a bit surprising to me because I think he's the most talented, but he's not really a good pass pro guy, and Ty Johnson is. And so that's why Ty Johnson gets, the run that he does. Most notably, they're best when running to the right. And so that means a guy like Za'Darius Smith is going to have to be the edge setter, and you're going to be looking at a linebacker and Jack Campbell to kind of fill the gap between him and Reader. And those are the areas they kind of have to really pay attention to when it comes to like the run game. That's where they tend to be the most successful.
Wide receiver group, you mentioned them a little bit. Amari Cooper, who's a former Raider, Cowboy, Brown. Khalil Shakir, former Spartan Keon Coleman. Also have Mac Hollins, Curtis Samuel, and Jalen Virgil.
Keon Coleman's coming back from injury this week, which means he will probably step back into a starting lineup, which will push Mac Hollins into more of a complementary type role. But again, those first five minus Virgil, so Coleman, Cooper, Shakir, Hollins, and Samuel, they use all five. They don't have a true number one. That's, like I said, by design. They like to rotate their guys through. Like Keon Coleman's going to be the X most of the time, but they like to have their other guys move through different positions. They'll run like Shakir will be the guy they run out of the slot the most. He's one of the more productive yak guys in the entire league. When they like to get him the ball quick and let him just run, and he's very productive with the ball in his hands. Curtis Samuel's like that as well. They line him up in the backfield sometimes. They'll do him on ends arounds, trick plays, try and get him the ball, try and get him going with yak as well. Cooper, they can line up in the slot or outside. He ends up spending a little bit more outside. Mac Hollins tends to be their red zone target. He's the guy that they go to for like the jump balls and stuff like that. And then Coleman is the rookie who I think is the most productive. He's also has the highest ceiling, and he also can be like their deep zone threat. When you look at where Allen is distributes the ball. Whenever he throws, he has the most success when throwing to his left. Like if you look at the short, at the it's like the 0 to 9 yard area, the short area. His highest statistical area is to the right, or I'm sorry, to the left. In the mid-range, again, it's left. Deep, it's left. And you tend to see him hitting Coleman down there. So he's very successful when throwing to that left side. And with the Lions, while they don't run static like left, right, cornerback positions, they tend to have Therrien on the left more often than not. So this will be a game where Therrien will have to be on his best game. He's coming off arguably his best game, but Therrien will be the guy that will be, I think, the most challenged in the secondary. And then if Kirby is floating his way, Kirby will have to be on point as well, because that tends to be where Josh Allen finds the most success, especially going deep. And Keon Coleman is often the recipient of those big plays. So Yak is a big deal. Shakir is like I said, a really dynamic with that, but they all kind of have certain things that they're really good at. And Allen just he'll find the guy that's open.
Tight ends, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, and Quentin Morris.
Kincaid's supposed to return from injury as well. They run a lot of 12 personnel. They run, let me see my notes here. I think it's like 20% of the time they run 12, which means two tight end sets, about a fifth of the time. And that is when they would have both Kincaid and Knox on the field at the same time.
Good pair of tight ends.
Very good pair of tight ends, and they'll run them quite a bit. Morris is a special teamer. He gets a lot. He's a really good special teamer. And I think him missing out of the lineup last week, it was the guy who replaced him in the punt protection is the guy who gave up the leverage, which led to the punt block. So Morris returning would be big for them as far as their pass protection on special teams.
Offensive line from left to right, Deion Dawkins, David Edwards, Connor McGovern, Osiris Torrence, and Spencer Brown.
Tackles are very good. They give up the fewest sacks on the year. I think the interior is average, with Osiris Torrence maybe being the weakest link. He tends to be the guy that gives up the most pressures. I believe he's given up upwards of 30 pressures on the season, whereas the other guys have all been like 20 or less. Torrence is a guy who you're going to, like I said, they like to run right. So he's a guy that's going to be important to them in the run game, but he could be a guy that maybe you can take advantage of in pass pro. So if you're going to go a little bit big and move Za'Darius Smith inside, that's typically the guy you're going to line Za'Darius Smith up over in order to try and get some pressure. One thing I want to note here is that backup Alec Anderson is their sixth offensive lineman. And the reason I mentioned him is because they use a sixth offensive lineman on 15% of their offensive plays, most in the NFL. So we're talking like double digit snaps a game with six offensive linemen on the field. Okay. So this is designed for the run game, but it's also designed just for pass protection. It's and they want to force teams to account for that sixth offensive lineman, and they want those teams to go to shift out of sub packages and into a base. Problem with the strategy this week is the Lions are in base
Lions
almost all
like
the
to,
time.
yeah, they
Yeah,
like to
all the
play in
time.
base.
So I don't think it's really going to be as impactful for them this week, but they do lean on that sixth offensive lineman more than anybody in the league. So again, just to kind of spread it out here again, you had a sixth offensive lineman about 15% of the time, maybe upwards of you can go out, I've seen them go all the way up to 30% at different on different games. Then you have a second tight end on the field in 12 personnel about 20% of the time. So like you can have 35 to 50% of the time that they're basically running with close to max protect, where they have like six or seven blockers in order to try and establish the run or to keep Josh Allen free so that he can throw or scramble if he needs to. So very big up front, very big, and lots of bodies that are designed to block. And so I expect the Lions to counter that by basically staying in base a ton.
All right, flipping over to the Buffalo Bills defense led by Bobby Babich.
So McDermott is, he got his start in Philadelphia back in the day under Andy Reid. He, you know, develops his, he learns his craft from a whole variety of different smart-minded head coaches like Ron Rivera and Steve Spagnuolo and stuff like that, right? He runs an attacking one gapping front. It's a four-man front most of the time. They very rarely add a fifth guy beyond that. So in that four-man front, it's going to look very similar to the Lions, where they're going to have like a 5-7 technique on one defensive end spot, a three technique, a one technique, and then they're going to have like a guy who was either at the seven or the wide nine. So it's going to be very similar to the Lions in how they have their kind of defensive ends positioned, where you may see like a five technique and then like a couple of interior guys and then a wide nine guy. They'll bring Von Miller on sometimes as like an outside pass rusher, Sam type role, but it's very rare that they would keep him on without removing one of their other defensive linemen because they only run two linebackers like 100% of the time. They run two linebackers and they often don't rotate those linebackers either. And so, four man front, two off ball linebackers. And so that means they're in sub package 100% of the time. Sometimes it's a nickel, sometimes it's a dime, but they are in there, they live in sub packages. So with that living in sub packages, it ends up producing lighter boxes. So if you have a good offensive line, then you can control and you can control that four man front and then maybe dual block out to those linebackers. You're going to have some interesting lanes that you can run through. So, you know, it's the defensive line is a little helter skelter in how they're productive because they're kind of out there alone. They don't get a lot of blitz help. The Bills only blitz about 18% of the time. That's 30th in the NFL. And they basically just try and get pressure with their front four and then let their secondary play in zone coverage. And then they use a lot of disguise in their zone coverage in the secondary. They will maybe drop an edge rusher and then bring an extra like edge guy or like an extra corner or something or a safety off the other edge to kind of overload, like we've seen a lot of teams do. But it's all about disguise for them. They're going to show you one thing pre-snap and then shift into something else post-snap. The Vikings do that a lot. And I think the Lions do a nice job of adjusting to that because they have a good offensive line that can give them time to adjust to what's happening. They'll show two high looks and then shift into a single high. They run cover three about a third of the time. That's they run cover three more than they run everything else. And when you run cover three, that puts that safety robber like kind of down at the linebacker level. So that's why they, you know, you live with two linebackers, you bring that safety down. Now you kind of have a third body in that middle in that box area. But that also leaves them susceptible down to seams. And that's, you know, where the Lions are strong. We've talked about this before. Teams that run single high can be beat by the Lions, either by stretching the field with Jamo or attacking the seams with St. Brown and Sam Laporta. So if they run their defense like they normally do, The Lions' priority will be to hold their pass pro, to try and eliminate any, pressure and diagnose where it's coming from quick, allow Goff time to set up in the pocket, and then find the open guy because the Lions know how to beat a zone. And it's just going to be a matter of how do they shift, what are your cues, and then how to identify what's happening in front of them. All right. I'm almost done. Defense, I want to talk about the defensive line real fast
There.
because that's where we're going to start. The defensive line is like I said, it can be very helter-skelter depending on opponent, and they tend to do well against lower-level or mid-level opponents, and they tend to perform poorly against elite-level offenses. All right. And the Lions definitely have an elite-level offense, so that is very good for the Lions' favor. When you look at what the Bills do well, specifically like against the run, like they're very good at stuffing the run. They're the best team in the NFL at stuffing the run. They stop the ball carrier at the line of scrimmage 23% of the time. That's best in the NFL. But if they don't stuff them, the other 77% of the time, they're 23rd in yards before contact, 22nd in yards after contact. They've given up the 26th most 10-yard runs over 10 yards. And they are basically allowing teams to gain yards in chunks if they can get past that initial wave. So if you have a good offensive line that can get their blocks off and set up the run, there's open yardage behind them for them to get into space. And I think that will be an important factor for the Lions. When you look at the different good offensive lines that the Bills have faced, they've given up points to those offensive lines. When you look at the good offenses, excuse me, when you look at the good offenses that they've played, they tend to not be as successful against those good offenses. For example, and this is my last point, and then we'll get into the players. If you look at the best offense they've played this year, that's the Ravens. Ravens are the third highest scoring offense. Like Lions are one, Bills are two, Ravens are three. When they played the Ravens took advantage of them. And the Ravens put up 35 points and they beat them. But then when you look at that's the only top 10 offense they've faced all season. But if you look at who they faced just outside of the top 10, I know it's kind of crazy, right?
But the Rams have a top, they just haven't been healthy.
Well, we're
Like
getting
that
there.
Rams off. Okay, all right.
We're getting there. So from a the only top 10 offense on the year that they've faced is the Ravens, and they lost. Then tied for 11th in scoring offense, Texans, Chiefs, and 49ers. They lost to the Texans as well. They beat the Chiefs on what had to be an almost perfect game. And then the 49ers, if you remember, that was the snowstorm game, which you can basically throw the offenses out on a game like that. So 2-2 against top 11 offenses. If you expand it out to top 16, so at the top half of the league, this is where you get the Seahawks, who they beat, and then the Rams, who are 16th, and that's the team they lost to. So they've only faced six top half of the league offenses, and they've gone 3-3 in those games, mostly because their defense has given up points to those offenses. The other seven games that they've won, six of them were against bottom 10 offenses in the league where they shined and looked really good, but they should because those offenses were not very good. So when you get them against better opponents, the Bills defense, some of the shine comes off them a little bit. Offense is great. Offense is going to put up points. but their defense is susceptible. And I think that came to fruition last week when you watched the Rams game, where they couldn't stop Matthew Stafford and the Rams receivers. Like, they just kept driving down the field, and that's why it was a, 86 points were scored in that game. That production, that type of game, it plays out when you look at the numbers, because they are susceptible, and it starts up front. That if they get can if you can push them around up front, you can take advantage of their secondary, you can score points, you can turn this game into a shootout real fast. And I think the Lions definitely match up well against what the Bills try and do, especially with them having light boxes for the majority of the game.
Defensive line, the tackles are Daquan Jones and Ed Oliver. The ends are Greg Rousseau and AJ Epenesa. Reserves, Casey Tuhill, Jordan Phillips, Austin Johnson, Dwayne Carter, Quentin Jefferson, Javon Solomon, and got to throw Von Miller in there, whether he's lining up as a linebacker or defensive end.
Right. Rousseau is their most productive. He lines up on the left side, so across from Penei Sewell, about two-thirds of the time. He spends about a third of the time on the other side, just because when they flip their defensive line, depending on what the Lions' offensive set would be. But he spends a majority of his time on the left side, and he'll be facing off against Sewell. He has 44 pressures, according to NFL Next Gen, and he is by far and away their best pressure man. And 44 is not a lot. It's good, but not a lot. Their next best pressure guy is Ed Oliver, who has 25 from interior. Von Miller has 21, and he only plays like 30, 40% of the time, yet he still has 21. And then Daquan Jones, their other interior nose tackle, has 17. And then Epenesa only has 16 on the year. Remember how I talked about the fact that they play like a 5-7? Like, Epenesa is essentially that role. So he's kind of like Josh Pascal, right? Like, that kind of like, I'm going to set the edge. I can play inside, outside, five techniques. I can step out to the seven. That's what Epenesa does. So he doesn't get a lot of pressure. Rousseau is more like Za'Darius Smith, where he's going to be at that 7-9. He's going to get to the angles a little bit more. He has a little bit more pass rush to his game. But again, two-thirds of the time, he's probably going to face off against Penei Sewell. So he'll have a harder task this week than he has in previous weeks. So Ed Oliver, I think, is a highly talented player, but he is struggling this year. He is not playing like the Ed Oliver that he has been in the past. Rousseau is by far their best defensive player, at least in their front seven. He's their best defensive player, where in the past Ed Oliver probably would have been. Ed Oliver is he's struggling this year, and his struggles have been a big reason why I think the defensive line has been a little bit helter skelter. So, Epenesa, I think, is average to below average. And you're asking him to play one side. And so really the threat here is Rousseau. And if they can work on Rousseau and they can start pushing them around in the run game, there's opportunity. The pass rush is just not, if you read any of the Bills writers, they think the pass rush is like the worst thing in the world. They just go on and on about how bad the pass rush is. And the numbers are not bad, but they're not great. And I mean, it's not a top half of the league pass rush by any means, but if they can't get home and you give Goff time to sit in the pocket, he can do some damage. And so I think priority one is going to be trying to establish a run game against these guys. And then priority two is just keep Goff clean. And I think it's doable, because I believe the Lions offensive line is better than the Bills defensive line.
linebackers, Terrell Bernard, and the return of Matt Milano. He's been back for two games. Dorian Williams saw a bunch of the starts in Milano's place. They also have Joel Andreessen and Edefuan Olafosio.
So it's very interesting because they only run two linebackers. It was Bernard and Williams. And Williams was so productive. He actually leads the team in tackles. Yet, when Milano has come back, they have not played Williams on defense at all. They have just kept him on special teams. He is their leading tackler, yet they don't even rotate him in with Milano. They have just said Milano's back, he's going to play. Here's the deal. Milano hasn't played in a couple years. He's back, been back two games after a couple years off, and
He's
he looks,
rested.
he, well, he's rested, but he looks like he's rough around the edges
Rusty.
too. Yeah, he's slower than I remember. He looks hesitant. He's not as aggressive, and it's gotten to the point where some Bills writers are wondering if he's even a bit of a liability right now because he's not playing at his level, and he may not even be playing at the level Dorian Williams was, but they want to get him back up to speed, and so they're kind of going through the bumps and bruises to get him on the field. So Milano has not been playing as well. Bernard is a talented linebacker, but he's not playing great. He's not playing that great right now either, and I think he's a guy that if you're going to run, there's opportunities to run at these linebackers and you can create space, like I talked about a little bit earlier. If you can like run some inside duo and then peel off and get a lineman on a linebacker, you can get some chunk yards against this front six.
Secondary. The corners are Rasul Douglas, Christian Benford, and Taron Johnson. Reserves being Jamarcus Ingram, Kyir Elam, Cam Lewis, Brandon Codrington. The safeties are Taylor Rapp and Damar Hamlin, with the backup being Cole Bishop. They got several guys listed as questionable in that defensive backfield. Damar Hamlin's one of them. Does he just need to be questionable the rest of his career?
No,
It's
it's,
amazing what he's done,
oh
but
yeah, for
at the same
sure.
time.
So the Bills did a walkthrough on Wednesday, and then a snowstorm hit on Thursday, and they had to cancel practice because they couldn't get the players to practice safely. So they did not actually practice Wednesday or Thursday. So all injury reports are just estimates based on what the coaching staff believes. What's interesting is Rasul Douglas was listed as would not have participated both days. Taylor Rapp, starting safety, listed as would not have participated both days. Hamlin was listed as would have participated and then with a back injury. And then on Thursday, they added a hip injury to that and listed him as would not have practiced. So he all of a sudden gained an injury during a walkthrough, or it just happened to pop up and they weren't aware of it. But both safeties have not practiced this week, and one of their starting outside corners has not practiced this week. And if all three of them can't go, an already suspect secondary is becomes very suspect and could cre if any if one of them is out, it's a potential opening for the Lions. If you're missing two or three, huge opportunity for the Lions to attack the secondary. So let's break them down just a little bit. Benford is great. I think Benford is their top corner. He will play well on the outside. And then opposite him, Rasul Douglas fits the system well. He is, like I said, very questionable to play. And if he doesn't, it's not entirely clear which direction they would go to replace him. Taron Johnson is their nickel, and he spends a lot of time in the box. So you know how I talked about how they would roll, they'd show you too high and then roll a robber down. Johnson kind of starts out in the box, and then if they roll a robber down, Johnson's the guy that kind of will bail out, and then he can slip into coverage. He can also stick in the box and then try and stop the run. So Johnson is, again, kind of like this new age corner where he can cover, he can stop the run, he can do a lot of different things. And he does very well in that role. Hamlin and Rapp are their starters at safety. Like I said, both susceptible to not play this week. And then when they go to dime, they bring Cam Lewis on, and Cam Lewis plays kind of their dime safety role. So he'll play kind of like the opposite slot of Johnson when they want to go with six defensive backs. I believe Cam Lewis would be their would step into a starting role if Hamlin or Rapp can't go. Cole Bishop is a rookie who's mostly played special teams, but they drafted him in the second round. He would probably be the next man up. And then Lewis Cine, former pick of the
Vikings.
Vikings. Yeah, right. He's now in Buffalo and still not succeeding or finding the field in Buffalo as well. So I don't know why his career fell off, but it did. And while his name is there and you might remember him for what he was, he's still what he was. He's what he has been in the NFL and not really someone to be scared of. So if they have to lean on Lewis and Bishop, I think it would take their safety option off the table. I'm sorry, their dime situation off the table. They basically just have to stick with their nickel, and they'd be playing with potentially three new starters, which, like I said, could be very problematic for a secondary that I think is already going to struggle with what the Lions are going to throw at them.
Moving over to the special teams, Tyler Bass is the kicker, who's struggled with extra points this year, have missing four already so far. Also has missed four field goals, all of them in the 40 to 49 range. He's nailed both kicks over 50, including a 61 yarder. So he's got a bit of a leg in him. But overall kind of average. The punter, we know very well, Sam Martin, longtime Lions punter. His stats, I don't know, he's been pretty consistent over his career, sitting in between, 45 to 48 yards per punt. He's holding that up this year, 47.6 yards per kick.
I did have a punt blocked last week that was returned for a
Right for
touchdown.
TD, yep.
So their long snapper Reed Ferguson,
Oh, I'm jumping ahead.
because he got blown up. He
He
got blown
did.
up,
Yep, got run right over.
and then the backup tight end with Morris not in got run over as well, and that's where the punt block came from. So Ferguson overall doesn't have very high scores in PFF, and
But he's zoned in now,
well,
like.
maybe. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, he definitely was on the wrong end of that punt block for sure. Interesting. Okay, we'll finish off the returners, and I'll get to my
Brandon
aspects.
Codrington returns punts and kickoffs. Maybe see Ty Johnson, maybe see Ray Davis return a kick.
Yeah, their kickoff returns not anything special. Codrington is good as a punt returner though, and so someone they'll have to be on their they'll have to be prepared for. Okay, final play of the Rams game. If you recall, the Rams were down the fourth down. There was like 5 seconds left in the game, and they elected to punt the ball. You remember? And they just kicked the ball as high as they
Right.
could in the air, right? They're just like, let's just put as much hang time on it as we can, run out the clock.
Brady wanted
And
to throw it way up in the air. He wanted staff to stay out on the field.
But they elect to punt. Something you may not have noticed when it happened, because I surely didn't, but I found out after the fact, the Bills punt return team, They only put 9 players on the field
Not
for
gonna
that
work.
final play. So even if they wanted to like run a punt block, or if they had a return set, or they wouldn't have been able to do it. They had 9 guys on the field. 9. So when you wonder why their special teams is ranked 29th in DVOA, it's because they're let just last game, they had 2 major gaffes. And I think the way the Lions special teams operates, there's opportunity for them to maybe take advantage and sneak a score on special teams. And boy, would that be that could be super, super important.
Yeah, it's been several weeks, I guess, since the Tennessee game, right? It's the last time they scored on special, probably the only time this season they've scored on special teams. Matthew Smiley, Bills special team coordinator, not smiling in his picture
No.
when you're looking at it. But I don't know, sometimes weeks like that where you have like a real poor special teams performance, they kind of like tighten everything up during the week. But like you said, they did miss a couple of days of practice, so.
Yeah, and they haven't been that good before. Like, you know what I
Yeah, but
mean?
when
Like
it's really bad, sometimes it gets truly addressed.
So, yeah, but no practice and bad overall. I think the Lions have a real advantage on special teams that they could really have some fun with.
Right, that's it for their roster. So you got the win last week as I picked the Packers to win. You picked the Lions to win.
Yeah,
You get to go first.
you're gonna have to you're gonna have to
Win the
get it
rest of the
together.
games, right?
Yeah, at this point, it's a you're in a tough spot because I think I have, let me pull it up. I have 8 wins. Yes.
So it's
So you
8-5.
8-5. So you have to win
Oh,
out.
I've got plenty of room. Well, I don't have to win out. There's at least one playoff game.
Well, that's true. That is true.
So
That is
they,
true.
the Lions have, we didn't even mention that. The Lions have clinched a playoff berth, so
Yeah.
they will play at least one playoff game. Hopefully,
At
they
Ford
play
Field.
3 playoff games with a week
Yeah.
off, with the week off at the beginning. If not, they play 4. But
Yep.
so I have plenty of time to make up ground. I can still
Well,
screw around this week.
so it's 8-5. Yes, I have the honors here, but as far as the regular season goes, I feel like you're going to be up against it. So, okay. I think I've made it pretty clear I'm expecting points to be scored in this game. I think Buffalo's offense is very good, and they have the potential to, they scored, like I said, they averaged 30.5 points a game. They have the potential to put that up. The Lions, the Lions defense, even though they have, on the season, they only give up 18 points on average. But we saw last week with the injuries and stuff, they're susceptible to give up 30 points. Bills average 30 points. It could really, I could see them reaching the 30 point mark. It's really a bit insane to predict that they would score 30, but that's kind of where my gut feeling is. I think the Bills will score 30. The problem is I'm not scared of the Bills defense. The more I dig into this defense, the more I see how they're susceptible, the more I think the Lions should be able to take advantage. And so I'm calling for the Lions to score 38. And I'm predicting a 38-30 win for the Lions, way above the
Yeah,
over-under.
way over the
And
over.
probably I should probably be 10 points less on both teams, but I got a weird feeling about this one.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. Although the Buffalo Rams game was super high scoring last week, but that even gives me more reason that like the score will be a little more reined in. 54 and a half points is a lot of points in an over under. Vegas is usually right. So I'll go right around. I'll go just touch under Lions 30, Buffalo 24.
Okay.
No,
So we,
wait. Lions 30,
oh,
Buffalo 27. I
good.
will go over because you've went so far over.
Yeah, I went way over. Like it's
You'd be right.
it this is a game where I'm just like, it just seems like it should just be crazy.
But that's tons of big plays. You know, I don't
No,
know.
I
Both these
understand.
offenses feel like, they're gonna end up, they're gonna score all the time, but they're gonna chew up clock while they do it.
I have weird like I have like weird like there's gonna be 2-point conversions in there and stuff like that. Like it just weird stuff.
Lions are going to go for it on fourth down at their own 12.
Well, yeah, the thing is the Lions are very good on third down. They convert, let me get the number here. The Lions convert third downs 45.8% of the time, which is the fourth best in the NFL. The Bills' third down defense, they allow conversions 43% of the time, which is the 25th in the NFL. Like, there's opportunity for the Lions to not even get into fourth down situations, right? And
Right.
so it's kind of what I'm hoping for, right? I'm kind of hoping the Lions are able to get their first downs before they get the fourth down because the Bills are very good at fourth down defense. They are fifth best fourth down defense in the league. So,
Yeah, but how many fourth downs have they faced?
that's a great question. I don't know that. I
Okay,
don't
all
know. I
right.
just know the numbers. I just know the
Because if they,
percentages.
yeah, if they're 66% against fourth down, but they're two of three. You know, they let one go and stop two. Like,
Right. I'm not sure, to be honest. But I know you get third downs all the time, right? So, they have not been very successful throughout the year on third downs. So,
well, okay.
hoping to see a lot of those.
All right. They, 11 fourth down conversions on 25 fourth down. It's 25 times teams have lined up to go for it on fourth down against them. So they're
That's a
only giving
lot.
up 44% on fourth down. So yeah,
Correct.
25 is a lot. So it's like, all right, so they got a good fourth down defense. Yeah. In fact, they get more stops on fourth down
Then on
than they
third.
do on third down. Yeah, but it's 43.2% is, you
Right.
know, third. It's less than a percentage.
Well, just
1%, I should say.
take advantage of third downs. That'll be a key for me. I know my score is high. I think there's going to be like eight possessions, and I think you score on like six of them. You know what I mean? Like both teams. I think both teams. Like the difference for me is, I feel like there's going to be a couple of drives where the Bills stall and kick field goals, and that's going to be the difference in this game. Just those couple of field goals to, whereas the Lions find a way to punch one in. And then that's the difference in the game. They might get a weird special teams score as well, which would be awesome. Just gravy if you can get that.
You know, going back to like a lot of people getting all upset with Campbell and the situation going forward on these fourth downs, making like part of me just sits there and goes, we're in the good times right now. Like,
Oh,
this
yeah.
isn't going to last forever. Like,
No.
I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. I'm
Yeah,
not
it's fun.
going to get too upset over this stuff anymore.
It's fun. Like, I know it's stressful for a lot of people to watch these games and to feel like, oh, I need them, I really want them to win. And so, look, I see it firsthand sometimes at my house, right? But I look at it differently. I look at it like, it's going to be a new hero this week. Who's the hero going to be, right? And we inevitably see new guys stepping up, like you talked about earlier, Tim Patrick's and Ezekiel Turner's, and Jake Bates continues to kick game winners like they're nothing. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch this because This is literal history, like literal history happening, like records being set. We're gonna see, they're gonna win a 13th game at some point, this week or next or
Fingers
whenever, but
crossed.
like it's gonna happen. And so, that'll be another record, and it's pretty sensational to be able to experience, what they're going through right now.
Well, I don't know. That's it. That's all that I have to talk about this game. I don't know if you wanted to mention anything else. Bill Belichick becoming head coach at the University of North Carolina. The Simpsons game, Cowboys Bengals. How did you watch any of that?
My youngest on she had a half day preschool on Tuesday and came home, and she has very much gotten into football this year. Like she can name Georgia can name all the teams. Like she can look at their
Wow.
logo, she can look at their logos, and she knows like what team they are. It's amazing. And so she, we were looking at the Disney app to put on a show for her. I was gonna, and she saw the Simpsons, doing the thing, and she saw that, and she was like, "Oh, I want to watch that." And so I put that game on like Tuesday afternoon, and just like kind of watched that whole Simpsons thing. I didn't actually like, embrace it fully because I was looking stuff up on the Bills and whatnot, but I got to see a little bit of it. I thought it was unique. It was kind of cool. I didn't see any of the
Right.
pregame. I didn't see any of pregame stuff, other than like little clips on social media and stuff like I saw Mina Kimes Simpson character and stuff like that. But I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you got to see any of it or not.
No, that's the way I was watching the game on
Oh
Monday, and
yeah.
then I fell asleep watching it, of course. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest thing ever, but it is, it's like, well, they're going to
It's
be able to
unique.
do this with any, yeah, they're going to, well, they're, it's going to get a lot better, and they're going to be
Yes.
doing this with, it's not going to be just the Simpsons. I'm, maybe you'll be able to choose whatever characters you want to see playing in a game, like it could be the South Park guys. It could, I guess it all depends on what Disney
Sure.
properties they own. Like it's Family Guy, we're gonna have, or American Dad.
Right.
They're going to be able to do this with just about anybody. And so it is interesting. The little bit of it was, wonky or janky or whatever, like
Sure.
Krusty's kicking field goals, like the holder stood up and then the ball just went to Krusty and he punted it through the uprights, but it didn't even look like he drop kicked it, but whatever. It was still like a fun thing nonetheless. Great form tackle by Mo, on the on an outside, I think it was pass play. So there are some highs and some lows.
I think the Belichick thing is, I'm always skeptical of that transition working, going
Yeah, he's, I
from.
mean, he's already 72. I know his dad coached there, and this is kind of like a full circle thing for him.
Yeah, but recruiting and NIL and all that
Yeah, but
stuff,
he's going to get
like.
tons of NIL money. I don't know. His recruiting might not be that difficult.
But I wonder, I just it's just added stuff he doesn't seem to interested in, I guess. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Why? But he's got to know this stuff going in, or like, yeah, maybe he treats this like Steve Spurrier at South Carolina, where it's just kind of this retirement job he doesn't really care about. Works, 6 hours a day with 2 hour lunch. And they go 6-6 every year. And
Well,
because he's only 14 wins away from passing Shula. You think he would have wanted one of these NFL jobs and try to piece that together in 2 years,
Well, he's bringing his crew with him, right? Like he's
This
bringing
24-year-old
Patricia.
boy. Oh,
No, like he's bringing Patricia to run the defense and McDaniels to
really?
run the offense. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I
Well, McDaniels is fine.
Michael Lombardi is
Oh,
coming in to be
well,
like
yeah, they're
the, but
screwed now.
I think Lombardi like might be the guy who maybe heads up the recruiting type thing. Like he's kind of
Right, they'll
like
be
the
terrible then. I really don't like Mike Lombardi. I don't know why. Like, I've heard several interviews with him, and he always seems to be wrong.
Yeah, I really don't know how it's gonna go. It just seems strange to me.
Maybe he'll go
'Cause
great. Wins the championship the second year.
so many coaches are going the other way, right? Like going from like the Packers defensive coordinator was head coach at BC and left to be a D coordinator in the NFL because he, I think, in theory, like he should be able to get closer to the
Be an
a
NFL
head
coach.
coach. Yeah, and yeah, right. But like
Yeah, but Belichick been there, done that. Like it's not. He's well, right. He's not trying to. It's not like he's trying to. He's not be trying to become an NFL head coach. He could do that tomorrow, right? It doesn't. Doesn't really matter. Like, I think he's trying to do something. I don't know if this is for real. He wants to see if he could do it at the college level as an old man. Just see if he could do it.
I wonder what his patience level is going to be when
Low.
he would get. I this is a guy who would get mad at the greatest quarterback of all time, when he wouldn't run a play right. What's he gonna do when like an 18-year-old freshman at North Carolina comes in? Like, is that 18-year-old gonna be able to handle the pressure the way that that Tom Brady did at like 38 instead of 18? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. Saban had a lot of trouble doing things because he wanted to do things in the NFL like he did in college. Belichick's the best coach ever. Like, you would think he would understand, but he might not. That the ego might be so huge, but part of me thinks like, well, he's got to know that like he's got to change his approach when he goes down there, right? But maybe he does. Maybe he thinks he can keep it the same. I don't know. We'll find out. And we'll see. Keeps
Maybe
it
he's
the
more
same.
youthful.
Changes. Well,
Maybe
maybe.
he's feeling the youth vibe from his girlfriend, and he's thinking
Well,
he can relate to these college kids now.
yeah. Well, maybe. Well, they're going to re his players will relate to him this pretty similar way his girlfriend does. It's going to be all about the money he could provide them, so and we'll be on the same page that way. But I shouldn't say that's too cynical. That's probably true love. I don't know. I don't know. It could go either way. It's going to be interesting, an interesting experiment to say the least.
Right, let's wrap up here.
Yeah, we're done.
The Bear, no, I got one more thing.
Yeah, all right.
The Bears are basically eliminated at this, or
Right.
close to, like,
Done
so
for.
they're going to be playing with pride on the line when the Lions face them a week from, next week. Then they're going to be at San Francisco,
Who's just about to lose with
and
the live
they're
scoring update that doesn't matter to anybody listening.
right, but by the time people are listening tomorrow, the 49ers will have lost because they got 11 seconds and they're down six.
Yeah, well.
So,
The great plays in NFL history is just about to happen.
if San Fran is 6-8, they're still going to be last in their division. They're going to be basically almost out of it, and the Lions are going to have a chance to. I don't know if the Lions will have a chance to officially knock them out, or if maybe they get knocked out the week prior. But I really think the Lions will have a lot of motivation going into San Francisco in week 17. And the way things are looking for San Francisco right now is they may not have a lot to play for. So after the Bills, the Lions may get two teams that really don't have anything on their agendas. And then, depending on how things shake out, who knows what the Vikings game could hold. The Vikings game.
The Vikings game is going to be on Sunday Night Football for the number one seed. It's going to be, they're going to be, they're going to be one game back and all the tiebreak. If they're going to be one game back of the Lions and all the tiebreakers are going to go their way.
So
If
you
they beat the Lions.
think the Vikings are going to beat the Packers in a couple weeks? Because
Oh yeah.
that's the one that I think is really going to be the tricky one. So, I think if the Vikings Packers game is tricky because if the Packers end up beating the Vikings might get locked into that five seed. And if the Vikings are locked into the five seed and the Lions are maybe, are not, not, they've clinched the division at that point. There's not much to play for beyond the number one seed. It'll be curious to me if maybe the Vikings are just like, well, we're not moving anywhere, so we're going to take it easy. And then you end up having this game, this Bills game, could be like the last really competitive game where the opponent is playing for something, depending on how things shake out. Now, Vikings game, like you said, will probably end up having meaning, but Lions next couple of games could be they could be heavy favorites in those games.
Yeah, but Chicago's beat them last year, at home,
Sure, sure, sure.
and San Francisco beat the Lions last year at home. If things
Sure.
don't work out for San Francisco today, like they'll be pretty much done. I think they'll have like a point that they'll be like playoff probabilities way down there. So they likely won't have anything to play for. But I don't know, Shanahan, like you can't count those guys out. They could win one game. None of them are. It's the NFL. None of them are easy. But you're
No,
right. Like
no, no.
those two teams might not have much to play for. Although Thomas Brown's maybe try to look to get that job full time. I don't think it's likely, but I think he's going to be trying to rally the troops, although it hasn't worked out so far.
Yeah, I'm not too scared of them. Right.
No,
Well,
that's it. That's all I got. There were no new written reviews. That's why I didn't mention the numbers went up a little bit. So we appreciate that. Thank you everybody for listening. And do you have anything left before we sign off?
No, I appreciate all the people that keep doing and keep listening. I keep getting a lot of feedback from people anxious to listen to the next one. So we'll have this out as soon as possible.
Yeah, they'll already know that. All right.
Yep,
Enjoy the Bills game on Sunday, everybody. Hopefully it's a little warmer by then for anybody locally. And
yeah,
until next time, let's go Lions.